You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 1 and 2 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to be talking about over the next hour. We'll be looking back at England's win against Bulgaria in Sofia last night. They won by 6-0 to edge closer to qualification. But obviously, the story really after the game isn't about on-field issues. It is very much about the off-field issues. What will be the repercussions for Bulgaria? UEFA need to come down hard and make a big, big statement with their punishment they hand down to Bulgaria rather than do their usual, which is not treating it seriously enough. So we'll be reacting to some of the off-field issues as well as some of the on-field talking points from England's game last night. We'll also be focusing on Watford and Aston Villa as our Premier League spotlight this afternoon. We'll also be talking a little bit about the Fenway Sports Group. It's 9 years to the day that they took over at Liverpool. How much progress have they made? How far have they taken the club in those 9 years? Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558. This is the Premier League Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about over the next hour here. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 7020 558, sharing your views on what happened both on and off the field last night, as well as talking about Watford and Aston Villa. They are our focus of Premier League clubs this afternoon, so make sure you get in contact with us here on Love Sport. We had plenty of reaction yesterday afternoon, not just to the England game, and we had some messages about Marcus Rashford, but also about Reading appointing Mark Bowen. Quite a lot of negativity from Reading fans, so make sure you get in contact with us. WhatsApp us on that number, 0208 7020 558. Obviously, we start off looking back at last night's game in Sofia, and very, very sadly, we're having to talk more about stuff that happened off the field than on the field. And kind of sadly, it's kind of awful to admit that it's not really a surprise, that this doesn't really shock anyone, that we are talking about these types of problems. Before the game even started, there was a lot of talk about it. Bulgaria seemingly diverting the blame, suggesting we have more problems of racism over here than they do over there. Now, we cannot sit here and claim that we are whiter than white and say that there are no problems with racism both in football and society. But the fact that 5,000 seats were closed off in the stadium in Sofia last night due to previous racism incidents just highlights the problem in Bulgaria. And despite the fact that England won 6-0, got back to winning ways after their shambolic display in Prague on Friday night, which puts England very, very close now to qualification for the Euros in 2020. 2 goals for Ross Barkley, 2 also for Raheem Sterling, and then 1 each for Harry Kane and Marcus Rashford. We should be talking about England back to winning ways and an emphatic win for Gareth Southgate's side. However, unfortunately, and it is right that we talk in depth about these issues, about what happened last night off the field and some of the abuse that the England players were receiving. We're going to be hearing quite a lot now of some of the audio, some of the quotes from last night from a series of people. We're going to hear from Gareth Southgate, we're going to hear from Ian Wright, as well as the Bulgarian manager. But up first, we're going to hear a little bit from Greg Clark, the chairman of the FA. And obviously, a lot of the questions now about how UEFA act as a result of this match last night, that's one of the many people have been saying is one of the worst kind of football games we've ever seen in terms of the racism targeted towards players. And Greg Clark is saying that we are relying upon UEFA to take action.
We accept there will be a process, and due process must be followed. And me prejudicing the process by saying this should happen, that should happen, won't allow UEFA to deal with this appropriately and fairly when they collect all the evidence. Because I have a subset. I stood at the pitch side, heard some things, didn't hear others, saw some things, didn't see others. So me hypothesising, you know, what could happen when they've collected all the evidence, I do not think would be helpful. I think it would undermine their investigation and would make us look unfair.
England manager Gareth Southgate was also giving his views after the game, and he believes that his side made a major statement last night.
Throughout this, I know that whatever we do might be perceived as not being enough. But I think we've made a major statement. I think we've made a major statement with the way we played through such a difficult circumstance. I don't think a game has ever been stopped in net of this magnitude twice. And in the second half, although I hear that other things were going on, none of us on the pitch or at the side were aware of anything else going on.
There were lots of incidents, especially in the first half, and a group of about 30 or 40 hooligans were forced out of the stadium before the halftime whistle. And former England striker Ian Wright was giving his views at halftime on those racist incidents in the first half.
What you've got to understand now is that people, you can feel physically sick. You, Dicko, you've been on a football pitch, you've seen what it's like, but you have to continue playing through that. But what we're seeing now is that you don't now. And that is that's what's good.
You shouldn't have to stand for it.
It's a great day. It's a great day. Whatever anyone says, it's a terrible day for the Bulgarian people and how they've been represented. But it's a great day in respect of trying to tackle racism. Simply because we can see over them that stand with those banners what mean nothing. You know, what we're seeing is a set of fans that do not care and need educated. And that's what's got to happen.
And finally, the Bulgarian manager, Krasimir Balakov, claimed that he didn't hear anything in the game.
I was concentrated in the game. I didn't actually hear anything, but I just talked to the English press downstairs, and I told them that if this is proven to be true, then we have to be ashamed and we have to apologize for it. But once again, first it has to be proven to be true.
It is so mind-boggling, baffling to hear the Bulgarian manager say what he did in that interview after the game. Now, you might say that kind of in a legal sense, maybe he was told to say that he hadn't been quite informed of the exact situation and didn't want to get himself caught up in any drama. So it was easier to say that than not. But to stand there and claim that you didn't hear anything, you're waiting to see if something is proven, is utterly ridiculous. We were sat here hundreds and thousands of miles away from Bulgaria, and you could see the Nazi salutes, you could hear the racist chants, you could hear the booing, the monkey chants from the crowd whenever Tyrone Mings or Raheem Sterling or Marcus Rashford touched the ball. It really is confusing. The Bulgarian manager, I think one of the biggest problems you've got in Bulgaria at the moment is that there is, because of the education of where it is, that there is a massive change that's needed in Bulgaria. That's just the norm. They don't see there being anything wrong. That quite clearly that racism is an underlying issue, is an institutional problem, societal problem in the country, and therefore when it happens you're oblivious to how wrong and how appalling that behaviour is. And I think you'd like to think the Bulgarian manager now waking up today realises what happened yesterday, but to claim that you didn't really hear anything, you weren't sure what was going on. What did you think the referee was doing with Gareth Southgate, just having a chat about the weather? Quite clearly something, and you could hear it on the TV, on the audio from the TV and also the cameras. It was appalling seeing all these ultras doing Nazi salutes, and yet the Bulgarian manager seemingly is oblivious to all of this. UEFA need to come down extremely hard on this. This is their opportunity to really make a massive statement, to not just sit on the fence, give them another fine, give them a stadium closure. I fear that all that UEFA are going to do is potentially force Bulgaria to play a game behind closed doors. What does that do? What message does that send out? It just says to these ultras, oh, well, the next game you're not going to be able to watch, but that's it. They have got to come down hard. And I was fed up with this kind of view that, oh, the racism was worse in the first half and it kind of died down. It wasn't as bad in the second half. Racism is racism. Come on. You've got to get your head out of the sand. I don't care whether it went from everyone doing monkey chants every time Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho, Tyrone Mings, Raheem Sterling touched the ball. If it was just the odd monkey chant, that doesn't make it right. We've got to get our head out of the sand and start waking up to the reality. This is completely unacceptable. Tyrone Mings was on his England debut, arguably the proudest moment of his life, and it was ruined by racist, by disgusting chants that I thought in particular players like Mings, especially on his debut, showed an incredible amount of maturity that he could have been completely thrown off by this type of a situation where he was being racially abused by these fans. And to stand up to let the linesman know that these things were going on, can you hear it? But to then focus on the game is incredibly professional. And the England players come across so well from this situation that they were standing up for what was right. Jordan Henderson came across brilliantly. Harry Kane did a very, very good job. That they were kind of questioning, what on earth do you think's going on? The Bulgarian manager, who seemed oblivious to all of this, are you seriously kidding me that you don't realise how wrong this is? This is, as I said, this is an opportunity for UEFA to come down hard. They didn't follow the protocol. When the second incident happened, they should have taken the players off into the dressing room. Now, it was believed that because it was so close to half-time that England wanted to play onto half-time and then reassess. But UEFA were not following their own protocols. They've decided to bring these protocols in and they are not following the protocols. I think yesterday was a great opportunity of actually abandoning that game by sending out a massive statement. We're not going to stand by it. And to be honest with you, I think they should be taking the players off. They should finish the game the moment that one bit of racism happens. I don't care about this awful protocol. If a set of fans do monkey chants once at one of the players, that game should be ended. That makes a statement. Not closing 5,000 seats in a stadium. Not playing one game behind closed doors. What does that do to eradicate the problem? It is a much bigger problem. It is a societal problem, not just a football problem. And education-wise is where in countries like Bulgaria, there needs to be a massive change. But the only way that UEFA make a stance and start changing things, because it is only going to be a gradual process, it isn't going to change overnight, is by start banning these teams from competitions. Bulgaria should not be allowed to qualify for the next World Cup or for the next Euros. That's a way of making a big statement. If Bulgaria banned from football, that's the way of starting to change things and to improve things for the better. Just playing behind closed doors games or closing certain sections of the ground just simply is not good enough. And this is UEFA's chance to make a big, big stance. We're going to have more fallout after this.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. How do you feel about last night's occasion? What sort of a punishment should UEFA hand down to Bulgaria? For me, this is their opportunity to make a massive stance, to send out a huge message, a huge statement to world football, to society, actually, that this needs to be kicked out. There is absolutely zero tolerance. And zero tolerance means you don't even allow one bit of racism. It can't be a two strikes and then a third strike. You've got to come down really, really hard on these types of things, these incidents, and send out a massive statement with your punishment. Obviously, they were reacting to it throughout the morning and on Love Sport Breakfast. Love Sport's very own and former footballer Paul Mortimer joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's. And they asked him what his reaction was to the way events unfolded last night.
Well, I watched it with a bit of a heavy heart, but also knowing full well that this had to happen. It sounds really weird, but it's a good thing because there is no confusion around whether racist abuse happens at games. This has highlighted the fact that it actually does happen. And there's a couple of things that are a bit bizarre, that the three-step protocol means, Rich, that I could racially abuse you twice, yeah, and it's okay. Yeah. It's only the third time it becomes an issue, number one. And number two, they followed the first part of the three-step protocol, but then the second bit, you know, from what I gather, they offered the opportunity to the players to whether they want it to carry on playing, when really what should be happening is the decision's taken away from the players. It shouldn't be left to the players, because we're players, Rich. We want to play.
Yeah.
And it should be taken away.
No, you're spot on. That being said, we touched on it this morning that the Bulgarian manager's come out and just hasn't owned up to it. It's just bizarre. Like, it's, you know, if this is proven, it's like, well, we can see it. You were there. Like, we can all see it. There was a part of the statement from Kick It Out which read, we're encouraged that the protocol was initially enforced by the match officials, but UEFA must explain why players weren't sent to the dressing room during step two, as it clearly stated in the rules. TV footage also clearly shows the racist abuse continued in the second half, so it's unacceptable that step three was not enforced. This match should have been abandoned by the officials. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, they weren't going to do it, though. They were not going to do it. I'm sitting there literally screaming at the telly. Well, step two, they should now be taking the players off the pitch. We can still hear it. People are still saying it's happening in the second half. What are they doing? And they sat on their hands because, you know, this is a first. I don't think in an international game of this profile it's happened. So there was a bit of hesitancy and a bit of fear. But, you know, before the game, I remember Raheem Sterling saying, we have to trust the UEFA. We have to trust the process. Well, the process, for me, has not worked.
No.
And further to that, when you have the Bulgarian manager saying, you know, this, you know, there has been no racism, what message is he sending to those people who are the perpetrators? He's telling them that they're doing nothing wrong.
Yeah.
And so his words, I think there should be sanctions on him as well.
Do you know the one I want to touch on? You mentioned it there, is that this whole three-strike policy, and we were joking about it earlier, it's not a funny subject, but it is. Like, you almost saw, like, parts of the crowd, they would use up their two strikes, and it was as soon as the second warning came, it was almost like you could see them saying to each other, all right, that's me, cheers, guys, I'm off, I'll see you next week. You know, I'll use
it's
up my two next week, start again. It's just, it's insane.
Well, you know, when it comes to anti-discrimination education and sanctions, we always talk about zero tolerance. Zero tolerance apparently means that you have a couple of opportunities before zero tolerance kicks in. That doesn't make sense. In a world where we want to educate people as to the right ways to deal with things, we have to be robust and firm in the way we're doing it. And I'm really looking forward to what UEFA do about this, because they must show leadership.
Yeah, morning, Morts, mate. It's great to have you
morning.
On. The only thing is, last night, the depressing thing for me was I was looking at them and I was like, are you actually beyond education? Because the amount of... I know it's not to say that we should stop trying, but, like, the amount of warnings before that game, the amount of attention that was brought to it, and then we just saw several real-life actual Nazis rock up and continue to do it. And I just remember thinking, at what point do we just stop trying in that country and just take away international football for them? Like, what's your stance on that?
Well, I agree. I think we're at the stage now. Now, the irony, Patrick, is that we're in a half-filled stadium because they've got previous.
Yeah,
that, for
yeah.
me, is the irony. So what we're saying is what they're actually highlighting in the moment is that the sanctions don't work.
Yeah.
Because, like I say, we're in the stadium that's half-filled because of racist issues, with people being racist again. So what should actually happen now is they stay in the tournament, but they're suspended from playing games. So it's almost like you're that little kid on the outside of the shop looking in at the sweets but can't have them.
Yeah.
You can look, but you can't play. Because until you behave yourselves, until you educate your nation in terms of how they behave, you can just sit and watch and continue to lose points and continue not to your seeding to drop and continue to not have international football in your country.
The other part to this is that with technology now, like you can visually see who's been making the chants, who's doing the actual the Nazi salute, etc. You can see it. So there must be 70, 80 people at least that I would have seen that if they've got the facial recognition or whatever they can use, then surely a lot of these people can be dug out very, very early on. The other one I wanted to ask you about was, of course, the Bulgarian captain going over at half-time. The fact that the manager's kind of denying it to extent and saying, if it's proven. Look, the Bulgarian captain went over to the fans at half-time and it looked like he was pleading with them for them to stop.
Rich, we all know. The Bulgarian manager's asking us not to trust our eyes and our ears. It's incredible that he still denies... Well, to be honest, it's difficult for him. How can you actually acknowledge that within your country this is happening? Yeah. We have to do it in our country as well.
Yeah.
But he's got to acknowledge that this has happened, it has taken place, and you know, then we can actually start to take steps to implement
procedures to be able to help them, because they need help.
Yeah, well,
they need sanctions, but they need help.
Part of it is, and I'll always look at agendas, you always put yourself in someone's shoes, and I guess if you're the Bulgarian manager, and given that large sections of your fans have this mentality, I guess as part of it as well is that you've got to be careful what you say, because there's a lot of people out there that if you talk against them, that could then impact you personally. So I guess there's so many different things at play here, but I guess that's a concern, because then long term, it goes back to it. We talk about education, and I think when you get the minority, and it is the minority over here, I would argue, then there is a potential for reform. There's a potential for education. I just watched that last night, and Patrick's made the point. You just wonder what has to happen. You mentioned that it might be they get banned and it's like the sweet shop, you're looking inside. Does that make a difference, or is it just something that's going to be generational, that over time, like we've seen improvements here over the last 100 years, over time it will happen, but they're just a lot way further back than maybe we are?
Oh, they are. I mean, I looked at that kind of over-racism. It was almost like from the 70s, almost like when I was playing in the 80s. Mm. You know, that's what it took me back to. Now, what's happened to us in this country is reform, is sanctions, is harsher penalties, and that's what has to happen. The penalties need to be harsh, and if it means they miss tournaments or they don't have international football in their country, because it's not just about skin colour, their racism. Mm. You know, it was against, I think it was Kosovo and Czech Republic recently. So, you know, it's across the board. So, you know, they need education, they need it now, and maybe what has to happen is they're not allowed to entertain international football in their country until they improve their behaviour.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's interesting talking to you, Morts, on this, because as you say, you did play back in the 50s when it was such a...
Hey,
oh, sorry,
hey.
Sorry, my bad,
hey.
My bad.
Hey. Come on, at this time in the morning.
You know what, Rich, in that, I could see your face. I know you were going to give it to me. You're a creature of habit. You can't help yourself.
I can't, Morse. I love the fact that you're on the phone and I can actually do it without you cutting me off before. The problem is now, Patrick, you see, we do the show and he knows when I'm about to say something. He can see it. He can sense
it.
And he preempts
it.
I know. I get excited. I get really excited.
But I was just on this. So I was in Croatia recently, and they've had issues with racism at football games there. And I was chatting to a lad who was like my age, who was a football fan, but not like one of these ultras lot. And he was saying that like the vast majority of people aren't like that, but a lot of the ultra groups are. They're Nazis, basically. And he was saying that actually one of the ideas is just to go round primary schools or go round secondary schools or go round like just normal people, essentially. You find them on the street in Croatia or, you know, Bulgaria or wherever, and just give them tickets. Yeah. Because he was like, the average person does not go to a football match to give a Nazi salute. Mm. But the ultras do. And at the minute, the ultras are the ones buying the tickets. Mm. So I don't know whether or not, Morts, that might be something that you think, well, you still want people to go to games, obviously. You still want fans there. Maybe in these countries, they should just be giving them to essentially randomers on the street or school kids or something like that.
Well, I think what needs to happen, what you're just literally saying there is help is needed. Education is needed, and not just around racism, but on how to get the right type of fan to watch a football match.
Yeah.
So they probably do need help from other nations, and possibly that happens while they're banned from being able to entertain other nations in their country, possibly. But I think what should happen is, yes, I don't want to vilify the Bulgarians because, you know, it must have been, it's a sad day for Bulgarian football. Mm. But education is needed. And if we can help in any way to improve the situation there so that when international football goes there, the people do behave themselves. And you know what? They can be critical of players' performances. That's not a problem at all, as Rich will tell you, because he was always criticised. But
but
on a serious note, education will help. But I'm waiting for UEFA and FIFA because they have to step forward and show some guts and show some bottle and deal with it properly and quickly.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number about your views on the game last night, both on the field, because it was a good performance against a pretty rank Bulgaria side, even closer to Euro 2020 qualification, but also how hard do UEFA need to come down on Bulgaria? What would be the punishment that you would suggest that UEFA hand down to the Bulgarian Football Association? We're going to talk a little bit about Fenway Sports Group now, because it is 9 years to the day that they completed the takeover of Liverpool Football Club. It was agreed on October 6th, but was went through on October 15th, 2010. FSG bought Liverpool for £300 million. At that point, they took over from Hicks and Gillette, who had left the club in a pretty dire state. It had got pretty toxic between the fans and the ownership. And in the first few years of FSG, they had to deal with Roy Hodgson, who was the manager at that point. They got rid of him pretty quickly. Kenny Dalglish returned to the club. And in the first few years, probably up until about 2015, other than the 1 year that Brendan Rodgers led the side to second place in the Premier League in 2013-14, things hadn't necessarily changed massively for the better. And the transfer committee was a much maligned committee going back to the beginning of FSG's tenure. There were lots of questionable signings that were made at the beginning of the FSG ownership tenure. There were lots of question marks over whether FSG were really in it for the long haul, whether they were there for the long-term benefits of the club, or whether they were just there simply to make money, that they weren't looking at the benefits for the club on the field as well as off it. But in the last 4 years, there is no doubting that FSG have done a phenomenal job at the club, that this much maligned transfer committee of 5 or 6 years ago has done nothing short of a utterly phenomenal job over the last 4 years, led by Jurgen Klopp, the manager. He has the first and final say on transfers, which is in stark contrast to the previous man at the helm at Liverpool, Brendan Rodgers, who it always felt like he didn't have the complete trust of Fenway Sports Group and of John Henry, of Mike Gordon. That meant that he didn't necessarily really have the full say on transfers because they didn't properly trust him. Now, there is definitely a situation where they fully trust Jurgen Klopp. If he wants a player, they will back him with the money they need to go and sign that player. One of the critiques of FSG going back 6 or 7 years ago was that they weren't willing to push that a little bit further to get a player. If they wanted to pay £15 million but another team wanted 20, they weren't willing to go to that. And one of the most infamous examples of that could have seen Jordan Henderson, Liverpool's captain, leave the club to go to Fulham in a swap deal with Clint Dempsey, that the club weren't willing to pay an extra couple of million pounds. How thankful we are that didn't go through. But it's obviously led by the manager, who has the first and final say. But they're not unsung hero now, because he is now a very well-known man, the sporting director, Michael Edwards, who has done a brilliant job, not just in terms of the incomings and obviously the ones that spring to mind, Alisson in goal, Virgil van Dijk at centre-back, Sadio Mane and Mo Salah in the front three. But it's also in terms of the sales, the amount of money that the club have gained from player sales, that rather than just simply pushing players out of the door, getting rid of them, maximising the money that you get. Michael Edwards needs a statue outside Anfield. He has been that phenomenal in that role as the sporting director. And as all the kind of chaos ensues at Manchester United, they've been talking about how they need a director of football for so long there, and the lack of a sporting director has really hampered them. Well, Manchester United could very much do with someone like Michael Edwards in that type of a role. FSG has seen the expansion of the main stand at Anfield to take the capacity up to 54,000. There are plans to extend and expand the Anfield Road end. There were original plans to expand it by about 4,000 to 6,000, but there's going to be a much bigger expansion of the Anfield Road end to take the capacity well over 60,000. Obviously, the club are moving into a new training ground in a year's time at Kirby, moving on from, obviously, the famous Melwood. The club have recorded record profits of £125 million that the club is just going in a great direction at the moment. Defending European champions, top of the Premier League table with 8 consecutive wins to start this season and 17 in total dating back to last season. It wasn't that long ago, 5 or 6 years ago, that as Liverpool fans, we were very critical of Fenway Sports Group, and the transfer committee were doing an awful job. There wasn't much excitement with the players coming in. The squad wasn't great. The outlook wasn't great. We were a massively underachieving club. The lookout on it now looks so, so different 5 years on in 2019. And it just does show that, one, the amount of work they had to do and the amount of things they had to do to get out of the mess that we were in back in 2010 when they took over from Hicks and Gillette, But they have done a phenomenal job. So many right decisions being made. And it's a gradual process that it didn't just happen overnight. And even when Jurgen Klopp came in 2015, at the beginning of October in 2015, that it didn't just happen overnight. It didn't just happen in 6 months. It was a gradual process where decisions had to be made correctly. The transfer policy had to be got right. And you now see the difference to 6 or 7 years ago. The club was massively underachieving, not making the right transfers and criticised for the transfer committee. Now, that transfer committee has done an utterly phenomenal job, headed up by the likes of Michael Edwards, and now is just performing at such a high level, defending European champions and top of the Premier League table. It does just show how opinions can change of the ownership from 2012-13. People were very critical of FSG. Now, very much praising them. They've backed the squad, they've backed the manager, and they've delved deep into the pockets to back the manager, and have now created a phenomenal squad that are defending European champions and top of the Premier League table. Up next, we're going to be turning our attention to another Premier League club, a club right at the opposite end of the table to Liverpool. We're going to be talking all things Watford next.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. We're going to be talking all things Watford now, and I'm delighted to say we are joined by Mike Parkin from the Rookery End podcast. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Mike. It's not a great situation at Watford at the moment. Bottom of the table on 3 points, no wins. Are you surprised that Watford haven't had that bounce that they have had the last couple of years when they've changed the manager? They've gone back to Kike Sanchez Flores, but are you surprised that you haven't seen more of a reaction from the team after that kind of quite quick change at the beginning of the season?
Not really, Kieran. No, I think there's bigger issues that needed to be addressed for this team. So I don't think anyone really expected to see an immediate turnaround, especially bearing in mind that the teams we had to face after Kike came in. We had Arsenal, Man City, and then a very tough away trip at Wolves. So I think everyone is pragmatic enough to understand the challenges that this team faces. Confidence is very, very, very low, and some difficult matches. So whilst obviously there's concern, I think the international break came at a really good time because it's given everyone a chance to sort of sit back, breathe, and accept the situation we're in, and hopefully the team will be able to come back with a bit of renewed vigour, a bit of time they spent with the new head coach, and try and turn in some better performances, because we're in a very difficult position, as you say.
Considering that Watford had a good season last season, obviously were one of the better sides outside the big six and got to an FA Cup final, is it just simply a case of a lack of confidence? Is that too simplistic a view of Watford's situation at the moment, that once they start getting a little bit of confidence back, suddenly results will change, or are there much bigger systemic problems with Watford at the moment that's resulting in this run of form?
Well, as you rightly say, last season was terrific for the most part. And that, you know, the core of that, well, all of that squad is still there. We haven't lost any players. And I think that was the fear that many of us had as Watford supporters, that we'd see talent disappearing out of the door. We've actually added to the squad. You know, Ismail Assar is an exciting talent, and Danny Welbeck, who's come in with a lot to prove. So the squad is there. The talent is in the building. I think the start to the season has had an incredibly profound impact on this side. I think they were taken by surprise by that opening day defeat against Brighton. They shipped three, and it was an absolutely dreadful performance. And I think that shook them. I think that surprised them, because for the past 4 years, we probably dealt pretty well with teams that we were expected to deal well with, if that makes sense. The teams in and around our environs in the league table, teams like Brighton, we've got results against. So for them to lose in such dramatic fashion, you know, really got a thumping on that opening day, I think, shook them. And they haven't really responded. They haven't been able to bounce back from that. So to answer your question, I think confidence is the main issue. They really have been playing like a team that have been scared of their own shadow. They've been conceding goals left, right and centre. The 0-0 draw with Sheffield United was the first Premier League clean sheet in 20 games, I think, which speaks for itself. So there's a lot to sort out, but confidence is one of the biggest issues for me, I think. Obviously, defensive frailties have come to the fore because we've conceded so many goals. But I think in turn that comes from the rest of the team not doing their job, not protecting that back line. So, yeah, I think if we can get a decent run of results, then I think the form will turn around pretty quickly. But obviously the next game back after the international break is Tottenham away. It's pretty tough for us.
In Watford last game, which was a 0-0 draw against Sheffield United at home, it was interesting to see the selection in terms of what formation Kike Sanchez Flores went with, which was a back five. Do you feel that at home that was too defensive, or is that just kind of emblematic of where Watford are at the moment? They're too worried about conceding goals that they kind of set up too defensively.
Well, two things on that. I think first and foremost, it was absolutely vital that Watford didn't lose the game. And as we mentioned before, they're hugely low on confidence. So the most important thing was to gum up that defence, to really get a finger in the dam and stop conceding. So I don't think anyone was surprised or too worried by that defensive approach against Sheffield United, who, let's face it, are having a much better season than us so far. So Watford fans accepted that. And also the other thing is that's the way Kike Sanchez Flores plays football. His first target is to be strong defensively. We know that, we accept that. And I think most Watford supporters realise that the rest of the season isn't going to be the free-flowing football that we often saw under Javi Gracia. It's going to be much more defensive-minded. And quite frankly, with the situation we're in, that seems to be a sensible way of approaching it. We're in a desperate situation, and stopping conceding seems to be a sensible way of starting to get out of it.
No one has scored more than twice this season for Watford. Is it too simple to say that the absence of Troy Deeney over the last 6 or 7 weeks is the reason for that? Or is it more a case of that Watford need more players to step up and contribute in an attacking sense?
I think it's the latter, really. I think Troy not being in the side does have a huge impact. I think it's less from a goal-scoring point of view these days, and more from he's a captain's captain. He really is a captain in the truest sense of the world. He keeps everyone going. He keeps them honest in the dressing room. But we know we're not going to get 20 goals from Troy. What he does do is provide a good foil for someone like Andre Gray, who's been played up top on his own and really hasn't sort of enjoyed that role at all. But there is talent in that squad, striking talent in the squad. And yeah, I make you absolutely right. They do need to step up and start taking their chances. You know, the Sheffield United game, we created three very, very good chances and we enough to win the game, really. There weren't stacks and stacks of chances, but the ones we did create were very, very good goal-scoring opportunities. They weren't taken and we didn't win the game. So, yeah, I think everyone in the squad needs to take a long, hard look at themselves and realise that they're currently all underperforming, not least the strikers. So, yeah, I think they just need to step up. But again, it speaks of that confidence, doesn't it? It's never more true than with strikers. I think once they hit their stride, and it doesn't matter where they're going off, if one can go in off Andre Gray's backside, he's up and running. Same for Danny Welbeck. They just need that confidence, and the talent is there. So, but yeah, there's no one else can do it but them.
And just finally, Mark, looking ahead to the next game, then it's away at Tottenham. How are you looking at this game as we creep closer to the international break coming towards an end? Are you thinking this is a golden opportunity to play a Tottenham side that's in a bit of chaos at the moment? Or would you prefer the game actually to have been played before the international break, before Tottenham had a bit of time to kind of come away from the spotlight a little bit and have a bit of a break?
No, I think Watford needed that time. I think they needed the time to regroup and have that time with the new head coach. So I think it came at a good time for Watford. And, you know, it's still an incredibly tricky trip. Watford's record against Tottenham isn't great, certainly away from home. And despite their run of poor form, certainly by their standards, they're still a very, very good side. But that said, I think, flip it on its head for a minute, I think a team like Watford coming to Tottenham is we've got nothing to lose, really. Everyone will have Tottenham down as a home win on their coupon. But Tottenham will think, well, Watford have got nothing to lose, and teams like that are dangerous to play against sometimes, aren't they? So I think it's not a bad restart to the campaign, if you like. We can go and give it a bit of a go. They will try and keep it tight. They will be pragmatic in their approach. Watford won't go all guns blazing, but they've definitely got the talent to nick something. And I think Spurs will be a little bit nervous about it. The crowd will get on their back. They'll be expected to beat bottom of the table, Watford. And if they don't manage to break through early, it could be a nervy afternoon for Tottenham, and hopefully Watford can take advantage.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Mike. That was Mike Parkin from the Rookery End podcast, looking ahead to Watford's next game away at Tottenham. I think that's a great golden opportunity for Watford to get their first win. Tottenham are under serious pressure. They're in chaos at the moment. All is not well on and off the field for Tottenham. And there is a huge amount of pressure on Spurs at home to win that game. Watford still looking for their first win of the new season, and they've already played 8 games. Can Kike Sanchez Flores secure his first victory back at Watford on the weekend against Spurs. If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558. WhatsApp us on that very same number.
This is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. If you want to get in touch with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558, or you can WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be hearing a little bit from Ricky Sachs, who was on from Last Word on Spurs, who was on the Breakfast Show this morning talking about Spurs in general, but was first asked about what he thought of Harry Winks' performance for England last night.
Yeah, I mean, listen, for me, Harry Winks is always a neat and tidy footballer. I think because his name is Winksiesta, I think that's the reason why he's not given any real kind of credibility outside of Spurs fans. But we've seen Harry do this for Tottenham, you know, on numerous occasions, and there's no doubt about it, with age, the more he matures, he's going to get even better, and he will become an England regular, no doubt. You know, he's got all the quality there. He's played in big games for Tottenham. He's played the likes of Real Madrid, Barcelona, and come out being the man of the match. So, as Spurs fans, we've got absolutely no quality of that boy, and he's going to get better and better as time goes on.
Well, looking at the England team, we talk about the composition of the England team and whether having Henderson and Rice in that first game was two players that were too similar. Winks obviously offers something different. Do you think he was the biggest difference last night?
Oh, 100%. You know, Harry Winks, what he does is he's a forward-thinking player. Always wants to take you forward. Not really a sideways player for me. He's one that you can put on that pitch and you know you've got the confidence. He's always looking to play that eye of the needle ball through to the forward. And like I said, he's a positive thinking player, and you can't underestimate that, you know. Mm. So, yeah, very, very good player, and I've got no doubt he will become an England regular for sure.
Yeah, I want to talk about Harry Kane. Of course, got himself his goal. Good finish at the end. Maybe could have had a couple more. Firstly, what did you make of his performance? And secondly, where is Harry Kane at the moment for you? Is he firing on all cylinders?
Well, you know, his record at the moment, Harry Kane, for a player that's supposedly, according to some of the media, out of form. I think he's got a ridiculous record so far this season. And what I love about Harry last night in, again, a situation where it could have been very easy to have maybe gone hiding. Harry, like I say, the leader he is, you know, to have to deal with all that racism on the pitch, and obviously he's a captain on that field, to have to deal with that situation and still put in, for me, what was a 10 out of 10 performance, a hat-trick of assists, and he got his goal as well, which is fully deserved. I mean, he is, for me, the most complete striker in the world, Harry Kane. He's not just a great goal scorer. He links up play. His passing range is phenomenal. And I just feel like, I say, as again, as a Tottenham Hotspur supporter, you do see this week in, week out. And when he goes to England, some people are surprised. But we know how good he is. And it's great that the world now see that too. And he's a wonderful captain. I think you can't underestimate as a captain, as a leader, as a man. He's a fantastic player to represent your club, your country. And, you know, we're just blessed to have him at Tottenham.
No, I certainly agree with that. I thought the way he handled it last night, again, was very, very good. Do you think right now, though, he's the best that he's ever been? Because I guess I look at how his game's changed over the last couple of years, and he is, it, for me anyway, he's playing slightly differently. In some ways, very positive. In other ways, maybe slight part of the edge has gone. Is that fair? Or do you think actually he's as good now as he's ever been?
I think he's as good as he's ever been. I think, you know, if you look at Harry's goal scoring records over the years, he's never been a quick starter. But, I mean, having said that, he's still got a huge amount of goals already so far. We're in October, and I've got no doubt at all, November, December, that's when he starts to come into his own. I mean, for me, there wouldn't be another centre forward in the world I'd want opposed to Harry Kane. You know, the guy's proved that over 5-6 years. He's got a proven track record in the Premier League. He's got a proven track record for England now. Look at his goal scoring exploits there. So he's a top, top centre forward for me. And the most important thing for me, I love about Harry Kane, is the way he handles himself, both on and off the field. He's a pure leader, and, you know, he's a nice human being. And that's so important in football, to have nice people. And he's a lovely, lovely guy. And I said, I'm just so blessed to have him at our football club.
Indeed. One player that wasn't involved last night, wasn't in the squad, Dele Alli. Obviously going through a little bit of a tough time. Do you see him getting himself back in that England team ahead of Barkley and Mount?
Yeah, I think for Dele, it was probably a blessing in disguise him not being involved in that England squad, because I think he hasn't been fully fit, if I'm being honest with you, at Tottenham. And I think what he does need now is a regular run of games. You have to remember, Dele Alli is only 23 years old. You know, that crazy stat out there where he's contributed and scored more goals than the likes of Beckham, Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes. He's a fine, fine young player. And I think we have to bear in mind that he did have a wonderful you know, when he came on the scene, he was absolutely wonderful. And naturally, players do have a dip. But, you know, you've heard the news out there that he's dropped the clothing line. He's gone back to basics. He's got himself a nutritionist. He's started taking up yoga. He's trying to do all the right things to recover that form. And him and Maurizio Pochettino have got a wonderful relationship. And I've got absolutely no doubt that Dele Alli will come back. He's a top, top player. And I'm looking forward to seeing him back in a Spurs shirt, scoring goals, what he does best. But it will be a matter of time for me. I know he's a great player in there. And you have to support these guys. I think that's the most key thing as supporters. You know, when he burst onto the scene, we were so surprised by his rise. I think you have to support players when they're also going through a low. And I've got no doubt Dele Alli will return to be a top player for Tottenham Hotspur and for England as well.
Someone who has returned to Tottenham Hotspur is Michel Vorm, goalkeeper. Of course, the injury to Hugo Lloris, bit of a goalkeeping crisis. But Michel Vorm has re-signed for the club.
Oh, this is such a typical Spurs transfer, Michel Vorm joining. It was, listen, horrendous to see Lloris out to January. And I think Spurs are just covering themselves. Gazzaniga, let's be honest, and say that every game he's played in, he's always looked like he might have a ricket in him. Mm. And Alfie Whiteman, who's the reserve goalkeeper, Spurs aren't taking any chances. You know, bearing in mind our start to the season, you do feel like we've been very, very unlucky on the injury front. Obviously, Giovanni de Chelsea, we brought in Ryan Sessegnon, still yet to have a regular run in the team. It's good to see Tottenham trying to take no risks now and just bringing Michel Vorm back. He does a job at the end of the day. I'm sure Paolo Gazzaniga will still be ahead of him and will still be in place in between the six until January. But Michel Vorm is there just to offer a bit of experience. And he's one of the good guys, I have to say. You know, at Tottenham Hotspur dressing room at the moment, as we know, it's split. You do need to bring players back that will hopefully re-heal that dressing room. I'm not going to sit here and say that Michel Vorm's a healer, but it's important to have good characters around the dressing room. And he wouldn't be coming back to Tottenham if he was a divisive character, should I say. So it's good to see him back at the football club. And let's just hope we get a win at the weekend. God, we need it.
Yeah, indeed. A transfer rumour, Juventus offering Adrian Rabiot to Spurs as part of a deal to land Eriksen in January. Would this be a good deal for Spurs?
I think Tottenham needs to just try and get Christian Eriksen out of the football club. I think Christian Eriksen, as we know, no longer wants to play for Tottenham Hotspur. He wants a new challenge. He made that very clear in the summer. And Tottenham should be trying anything in their power to move Christian Eriksen on. The problem is with Christian Eriksen is he's probably happy to let his contract run down and then have his pick of who he wants to go to in the summer with a big signing on fee, and in which Tottenham get absolutely zero for him. So the power is all in Christian Eriksen's hands. I think Eriksen will most likely stay at the club and wait till the summer to get his move. But what I do want to see from Mauricio Pochettino now is, as we look ahead to Watford, is to bring players in that I think do want to play for the football club. The likes of Japhet Tanganga, Troy Parrott, Oliver Skip. Go back to why he was successful at Tottenham and give the youth a chance. Because this is a massive game for Tottenham Hotspur against Watford at the weekend. And we must get a win.
Harry Redknapp predicted Spurs will finish above Chelsea and Arsenal this season. I know it hasn't been brilliant to this point, but are you still confident they'll finish third?
At the moment, the way they're playing, I wouldn't want to predict anything, chaps, to be honest with you. There's been so much speculation about the manager and over the players' futures. I don't think I can sit here and definitely say to you they're going to finish third. I think Tottenham need to go back to basics and just start getting wins on the board. I wouldn't want to sit here and predict anything about Tottenham Hotspur finishing third at the moment, bearing in mind the way they're playing, their form table, it isn't great. The most important thing now is focusing on Watford at the weekend and going from there.
Great stuff. And lastly, Ben Davies, impressed for Wales at the weekend. Danny Rose struggled on Friday. Should Ben Davies be first choice left back?
Well, I think Ben Davies, as I've always said about Ben, he's reliable, he's dependable, he's not the quickest going forward. But Danny Rose, to be fair, he's not been in the greatest of form. Another player that Spurs tried to force out the door on deadline day, which never materialised. And I think at the moment, when you look at our left-back options, you'd probably say Ben Davies is probably the better one out of the two. So I would probably give Ben Davies a nod over Danny Rose based on the current form at the moment.
Love Sport.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.